This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Oregon College of Oriental Medicine, providing students with a foundation in acupuncture, Chinese herbal medicine, therapeutic massage, qi cultivation, and a focus on collaboration between Chinese and Western medicine. Information at ocom.edu.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, a weekly feminist news and public affairs program on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland. Please stay tuned and check out an hour of feminist news and public affairs.
لوقت الأنس تأخيرا أمان 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 داين فالواشي يعذلني والوجه يعذرني والصب لا زال والصب لا زال معذولا ومعذورا أمان 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 لقد نصرت على كسر القلوب لقد نصرت على كسر القلوب به
Welcome to Bread and Roses, a weekly feminist news and public affairs program. I am Jennifer Lavater, Portland Radical Women organizer and your host. Radical Women is a socialist feminist leadership training organization for women. You can check us out at www.radicalwomenwithane.org. Tonight we will be discussing the state of women in Iraq with Zahra Alkabi of Save Refugees, an organization she founded dedicated to assisting women and children refugees of war. If you are interested in keeping a vibrant feminist voice on the air, you can join the Bread and Roses Collective by calling Chris DeMaria at 503-777-2301. Thanks for joining us tonight, Zahra.
Thank you.
So historically, the status of women in Iraq has been far advanced in comparison to women around the world, a really rich history of women's rights in Iraq. And I wondered if you could give us a brief overview of the rights of women in Iraq.
Right. Actually, I would like to mention it is not only like Iraqi women rights. Everything about Iraq, if you are talking about Iraq, then you have to know this is a civilization that has been there more than 4,000 years before Christ. Mm-hmm. And that is like a long time ago. Yeah. And people even can't imagine how was, you know, the world at that time. And from that moment, Iraq was full of scientists, people who dedicated themselves for, you know, science, arts, writing poems. We invented in Iraq, like all the Iraqi people invented a kind of writing, and we called it the Sumerian writing, while that time you can't find any other country that uses, you know, any kind of writing. It was like a picture writing, while the Sumerian people in Iraq invented this kind of writing, and they call it the Sumerian writing. And so, of course, if we are talking about Iraqi women, because of this rich history, you can find Iraqi women from the history. They were leaders, they were teachers, they were professionals, they were much more organized than any other women group in any part of the world. Mm-hmm. And specifically, if you go to the Middle East, you will find Iraq is more advanced than any other country in the Middle East or among the Arab countries, actually. And I'm saying that not because I am Iraqi woman, of course, but anybody can go and check the history, like the modern history, the ancient history, and they can see what kind of woman Iraq has. So in terms of organizing and women rights and all the legal issues, we really like in Iraq, Iraqi women fight to get their rights, and Iraqi women has been always strong to get what they want. Mm-hmm. And if you go like many governments before, they were you know, trying to get some women be involved, and even women were participating in many political movements in Iraq. And if you go to the 60s and the 70s, you will find many Iraqi women who were really in advanced, you know, positions in the country, and they were very well educated. They were, you know, doing lots of heavy duties for their country. Even Iraqi women served in the military and served as a police woman, and that was like during the 60s. Mm. While if you go to some, you know, countries, even if like Western, you know, countries, mm-hmm. you will not find women in that position at that time.
Right.
But unfortunately, everything is going upside down now in Iraq.
Well,
for women, I mean.
I wanted to ask, because one thing that I remember is that women in Iraq had the right to vote a very long time.
Yeah.
Do you remember, maybe talk about that story a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I was born in 1970, so I don't really know, like, before that what happened with Iraqi women. But I do know, like, my sister, she was born in 1957. Mm-hmm. And she was telling us, like, when I was, let's say, 9 or 10 years, she was telling us that her friends and, you know, all the women that she knows, they were much, like, more, you know, in control and in power. Mm-hmm. And even my sisters, I remember that my older sister, she showed us some pictures, and they were encouraging our, you know, teams, the soccer team.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see in the picture, like at the soccer field, many women, and they were, you know, dressing like the Iraqi flag. And they, while, you know, when I was born, it wasn't like really like that.
Mm.
You know, it was less than before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting worse and worse and worse. When Saddam came to the government, we still have some Iraqi, you know, women organizations, and we still have the right to go and vote. And Iraqi women still in a position where they can get, you know, their professional degrees and high positions from the government. But then you can also go and see, like, how do, you know, the war with Iran, like, for 10 years, and then the embargo, the economic sanction for more than 13 years.
From the U.S.
From the U.S. also affected the position of women. Mm-hmm. And people became, like, the Iraqi family became more conservatives, maybe. And so they are trying to push Iraqi women to do what she maybe doesn't like to do, or maybe to stay at home, to take care of the children, because the situation was really economically was so bad and so difficult. And so they wanted her to, you know, support the family and to stay, you know, in the house. So many Iraqi women started to lose their jobs in the 90s. And many Iraqi women started to quit, go to university and get their degree.
Why did they quit?
Because, as I said, like, all the pressure, you know, from the community, and you are living in this community, so it's maybe the pressure can be from your father, sister, brother, or uncle, cousin, I don't know, from someone.
Pressure, and it was pressured to not go to school because...
Yeah, like sometimes people, they say, oh, because, you know, we economically, like, we are struggling, so we don't want you to go to university and give some money for your education. While education is free in Iraq, but still, if you go to university, you know, you need, like, to spend some money and get into public transportation and get, you know, some new clothes. So they were preferring to give the money to men to go and study, not to women.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say it also affected Iraqi women when it was, like, really bad economy that time. And also, like, professional women who quit their job. Why they quit? But because, like, when we were under the economic sanction, the government were paying very low salaries. And so, really, if you go to your job, it doesn't make sense. Like, you work for 1 month, while actually what they pay you, it is only going to, like, be with you 1 week, maybe?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Or less than a week. So, if you, like... If you are a mother of six or five children, and then your husband will say, we don't need you to go. You don't need to work because you are doing nothing. And the money that you, you know, receive doesn't help. So it's better for you if you stay and take care of your children and your house.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, many stories like that. And I do know, like, Iraqi families also... like, from time to time, the Iraqi family tend to be more conservative than, you know, before. Like, I remember when my older sister showed me the picture, and that was from the 1960s. And all, you know, her friends, all the women in the picture, they were really, like, wearing in a very modern way, very liberal.
Mm-hmm.
While I didn't see that... When, you know, I was like a teenager in the 1980s,
right.
I didn't see that picture.
And wasn't Iraq also in a war with Lebanon, or was that Iran? Am I mixing up some wars here?
No, actually, we didn't fight Lebanon, but we supported the, you know, the militias in Lebanon to fight each other. As you know, Lebanon had a civil war for, I think, more than 5-6 years. And it was between the Islamic militias and the Christians militias.
And that was in the 80s.
And that was in the 80s while we were fighting Iran.
Okay. All right.
Saddam was supporting, you know, some militias there. But we really didn't go, you know, and attack Lebanon.
So one could draw a conclusion that the advent of war historically from the 70s up till now has had a profound impact on the women of Iraq. And
of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Especially like when we had the war with Iran and we started, you know, to attack Iran in 1980 and we continued until 1989. Mm-hmm. So it's almost 9 years. And how many like soldiers we lost at that time? Mm-hmm. How many husbands had been died?
Right.
And so Iraqi women, especially when you are, you know, a wife and you have children and you lose your husband and you stay alone, you don't know what to do. That was really difficult, you know, time for Iraqi women also for 9 years.
Right.
And so many, many Iraqi women, they were under the pressure of the community, under the pressure of the family. For example, I know a friend of mine, she was married to, you know, someone that she loved. But then her husband just disappeared, you know. He didn't return like more than 3-4 years. And finally they just, you know, submit and they said, we think that he died. And so the family, her husband family, they asked her to get married of his brother.
Isn't that fairly common?
It's not really common, but they were trying to do that during Iran war because they wanted to keep the children under their control.
Mm.
They were afraid if this woman is going to go and get married from another person, a new person, and this person is not related to this family, then, you know, they are afraid and worried about their children.
Right.
And so they pushed this woman to get married from the husband, her brother-in-law. And, like, I don't know, how can you really do that, you know, especially when you were living with this family and all the family. Like, in Iraq, we have, you know, big house and big family, and you live with them, and they are all like your, you know, brothers.
Right.
And then they ask her and they force her. It's not only they ask her and take, you know, her opinion. They force her to do that.
Right.
And so Iraqi women had been really struggling for a long time.
So I want to let people know you're listening to Bren Roses, a weekly feminist news and public affairs program on 90.7 FM. I'm speaking with Zahra Alkabi of Save Refugees. And we're talking about the status of women in Iraq historically. And I want to move on to what's the current situation for women in Iraq. And you are an immigrant from Iraq, so you have firsthand experience to share with the listeners.
Yeah, actually the situation of Iraqi women is so difficult right now. It is just a horrific situation. And why is that? Because, as I said, like wars can impact women, especially, you know, in Iraq, because it's my country and I know what I'm talking about. The huge impact for women on Iraqi women caused by wars. And this last, you know, and current war and occupation, it really impacted the Iraqi woman's life. And many Iraqi women, as I said before, like during the economic sanction or Iraq-Iran war, Iraqi women, you know, lost their job or stayed at home, but they were in a position to decide. And they can say yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
But now, if you go, Iraqi woman really doesn't have any decision, doesn't have any control on the decision that someone, you know, in a position to make a decision for her, and she should accept that. So, for example, if any Iraqi woman had been kidnapped or raped, then this woman, instead of, you know, getting some help and some advocacy, some encouragement from some people, she will be killed immediately. And as you know, many Iraqi women are in prison right now, and many Iraqi women had been raped by American soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And Americans, they don't know, they don't realize what does it mean for Iraqi women to be raped.
Right. Because
and they think that this is okay with the people and with this community, while they don't know this woman will be killed immediately after she leaves the prison from her family.
Honor killing, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, this
is, maybe you should explain what is the umbrella under which that's happening. Is it a growing Islamic influence, fundamentalist Islamic influence on the state?
I don't know, like, really, whether it's Islamic, you know, fundamentalist, after what happened in Iraq, like, in 2003, many, many extremists and different political parties, they just, you know, jumped into Iraq. And so I really am not quite sure, like, who's behind increasing that level against, you know, Iraqi women. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. But what I know, like before, if something happened to this woman, if someone raped this woman, she will be in the same position.
Is that because of Sharia law that exists, or is it what is the...
Yes, it according to the Islamic law, if you made a sin, mm-hmm. if you were a sinner, mm-hmm. and your family or some people that know you, they can prove that. They can prove that you did a sinner, then you should be punished, and the punishment
is death.
Yes. But I'm talking about these women who didn't choose, who didn't put themselves in such a situation. So even if you go to their religion, even if you go to Islamic rules, Islam is not the religion that discriminate people.
Right.
And so this woman, she didn't do anything against her religion.
Mm-hmm.
So why she should be punished, you know, this way?
Right.
So if even if some people like extremists or Islamic fundamentalists, if they want to think about it, this woman doesn't deserve to be in such a situation because she didn't do it, because she didn't choose to be in such a situation. And she's a victim. She needs some help from people.
Right. Well, I guess what I'm not trying to slam Islam. I'm just trying to point out that Sharia law exists in the constitution now in Iraq. And previously it did not before the Saddam was disposed of by the U.S.
It's like if you go back to Iraq during Saddam's regime, for example, also, like our, you know, court and our law depends on the Islamic, you know, religion mm-hmm. because it's Islamic country.
Maybe we should explain what Sharia means.
Yeah. So now the country became more conservative. I don't really think it's the Sharia law. I don't think now some people are trying to push the Islamic law because it was there before.
Mm-hmm.
It was there, but what I don't know, like why some people are trying to keep Iraqis under this, you know, situation. Why some people are trying to push and react violent against women.
So
that's what I don't know.
So you're saying that this sort of war-torn reactionary situation has led to a situation where law is imposed unjustly on women.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So we don't have much time. So
okay.
I wanted to move on to. So you've given us a little taste of, you know, some of the challenges that women face in Iraq.
Right.
And you are here in the U.S.
Right.
And you're working on behalf of Iraqi women and children.
Right.
And I wanted you to tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I came to Vermont because I was sponsored by School for International Training, and I was receiving conflict resolution training. And when I was there, like, it was a wide-eyed open to me, this training. And I think that all, you know, the actions and the violence that is going on in Iraq right now, it has a really huge impact on women rather than men. Why? Because men, they are always, you know, the people with guns, with the power, with the physical ability to fight and defend themselves. While Iraqi women and children, they are not in a position to defend themselves when someone is trying to attack them or someone is trying to, you know, get their rights away from them. And it's easily to put women and children under oppression. It's easier to do that in Iraq. And that's why I made it my mission to talk about the situation of Iraqi women, to talk about the situation of what was before, you know, 2003, before the Americans entered Iraq, and what is the situation right now. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to also be part of some documentaries to talk about, you know, Iraqi women from the history till this, you know, minute, and what kind of...
Which documentaries?
I have this Female Faces of the War. It's a documentary film, and the people from Seattle, they are working on it and still... It's not on the final version, although we gave you a sneak peek to the film, and it was really great to meet some American women, some women who've been served in the military, a mother who lost her son in the war, and another American peace activist. She has a woman organization, and she's trying to raise awareness about the sexual abuse for American women when they go and serve in the military. And I was talking, of course, about the Iraqi woman situation and what is going on with Iraqi women and what was the situation of Iraqi women before 2003. And that's why I'm trying to raise the awareness about, you know, the situation of Iraqi women. If I don't do that, if I don't say, then Americans, they don't know. They think that Iraqi woman is that, you know, kind of woman, the ignorant and not educated this week, while she is not. She wasn't like that. She became now with the American occupation. She became like this.
Right.
She became submissive. She became powerless. She became, you know, ignorant. She can't go anywhere. She can't leave the house. She can't do anything because the situation is so violent.
Mm-hmm.
And so women are trying to keep themselves away from, you know, violence and from all the massive destruction in the country.
So you work with an organization called Save Refugees.
Right.
And you started that organization.
Yes.
Is there something you want listeners to know about that organization since we only have a couple minutes?
We actually, we are trying to help Iraqi refugees, but as I said, we are trying to focus on women and children. Mm-hmm. And we help like some women and children who've been injured by the war.
Mm-hmm.
We were trying to work with other Iraqi women group. And one of them, she is going to be in the United States next month, and she's a doctor, and she's a founder of women organization, and she has a really big search and study. She found that cervical cancer and breast cancer became more, you know, because of the weapons, the depleted uranium that they are using in Iraq right now. And so she is trying to raise awareness about the situation, and she is trying to build the center for early intervention for cervical and breast cancer. And she will be here, and I hope she will come to Oregon, because she will be in a tour in the United States. And if she is here in Portland, I would like her to come and make the interview and talk about her program so maybe people can help her.
Okay, Zahra Alkabi of Save Refugees has been our guest for the first half of this Brennan Rose's weekly feminist news and public affairs show on 90.7 FM. And I do want to invite all listeners to a Radical Women meeting tomorrow, Saturday, May 30th at 3 p.m. Don't Mourn, Organize. Will be at the Brennan Roses Center, 819 North Killingsworth, Portland, 503-240-4462. I want to thank you, Zahra, for coming out tonight and speaking with us. And I want to invite listeners to stay tuned for the second half of our show, hosted by Ashley Thurstep, with author Lori Chance and naturopath Marcia Wiggins. I'm Jennifer Lavender, Portland Radical Women organizer. And stay tuned.
Thank you.
welcome to the second half of Bread and Roses. I'm your host, Ashley, and tonight I'm joined by author and life coach Lori Chance and naturopathic doctor Marcia Wiggins. We'll be talking tonight about energy and exhaustion in the lives of busy women and how we can learn to make empowering choices in order to stop the energy leaks that happen in our lives. We'll also be talking about an upcoming workshop that they will be hosting in Portland in June and how you can get involved. Please stay tuned in because a little later in the show, you'll have an opportunity to call in with your questions for Marcia and Lori and win a book. So welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So I guess I just wanted to start off just explaining what both of you do and how you found yourselves working together on this topic.
Well, I think as a naturopathic doctor, I work with women frequently. It's an area of specialty for myself, and frequently see women struggling with energy issues. Lori, I think, works with women frequently too. I'll let her speak to it. But we both have a passion for helping empower women to their optimal wellness and fullness of life.
Yeah, absolutely. I know one of my greatest passions is helping women really connect with who they are and how to really create the lives that they are passionate about every day. And there's a lot of different components to that, and it created a lot of synergy.
Great. So, you know, one thing we've been talking about preparing for this show is just ways that we as women and just people in general, but ways that we do tend to get stuck in our lives where we're just feeling like we're in a rut and, you know, things aren't changing. Mm-hmm. So what are some ways that, or some areas, I guess, in life that women tend to feel stuck, like that they report to you?
There's a lot of different areas. I think, especially for busy women and especially if they have kids, you know, we tend to put everybody else first. We tend to get ourselves in places where we think there's not enough time, we don't have enough energy, there's just not enough of anything, really. And that spreads into a lot of other things. It winds up being a belief that incorporates itself into whatever we do, and that's what creates the ruts that we get stuck in. It's like being on a hamster wheel and not being able to get off of it.
Mm-hmm. Do you hear the same issues from the people that you work with, Marcia, that it's time, not having enough time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As we're talking about, you know, things they can do in their lifestyle, nutrition, variety of things, it's like, you know, how do I find time to take care of my kids and do my work? And, you know, it's definitely always an issue.
Yeah. And to create, you know, meals that may be healthier mm-hmm. rather than the stopping by, you know, Popeyes on your way home or something. Right. So from your perspective, what are the areas in ourselves from which our energy can drain? I know there's a few different areas that can get out of balance.
There's really three different components to it. One of them is definitely the physical, and that includes our body, which I know Marcia is an expert at, and we'll be talking a little bit more about. But it also includes our space around us. You know, is the house clean? Is the car clean? Are those types of things really reflecting us, and do we feel good in them? There is also the mental component, you know, the thoughts that we have, as well as the beliefs that we have. You know, are we able to write down our to-do list, or are we staying up all night, running it through our heads five times so we don't, you know, miss something in the morning? And those beliefs, again, that we have, you know, are we telling ourselves we're capable, or are we telling ourselves that we're not enough? You know, that can have a huge impact. And then there's the emotional component, and that has a lot to do with really who we are underneath. Are we able to speak our truth? Are we taking action or choosing not to as appropriate, as well as how are we responding to others' behaviors? And, you know, who, like I said, you know, sometimes it's the unresolved things, too, that come up that really drain us and we're not aware of. So those three components, actually, they kind of will create a cycle amongst themselves, too. It can start in one place and move to another and show up in a lot of different areas. So
how do you, Marcia, how do you address the physical aspect as the naturopathic doctor here?
Sure. Actually, you know, one of the components of being a naturopathic doctor is holistic perspective, and it's so important to consider all those areas as well. When I sit down with somebody, we certainly cover all those arenas. But particularly when it comes to the physiological aspect, you know, I want to reassure people that frequently there are physiological reasons why they're feeling the way they're feeling. You know, there's such a myriad of components going on in the body that can actually contribute to you not having any energy. And, you know, you have to cover the basics, you know, trying to help make sure that you're doing stress management, eating a rainbow of fruits and vegetables and not too much meat, lots of water, exercise, all those things that we know already. But if those things, if you can improve those things in your life and you're still not getting results, there's a lot to think about. You can have adrenal fatigue. You can have some thyroid issues. Women who are experiencing hormonal changes. I work a lot with bioidentical hormones with women, and really important to consider those. You know, making sure your neurotransmitters are balanced, and lots of things to consider. Absolutely. And some of the things to look at, like if you're struggling with finding enough energy to play with your kids or clean your house or do the things that you're wanting to do, you know, it's really important to look at nutrient deficiencies in your body. Anemias can be a huge component, B vitamins, iron deficiency, things like that. Identifying food sensitivities, as an example, can also be a big component. Some of the things you can look at for issues with thyroid problems, if you're experiencing depression or difficulty losing weight, dry skin, headaches, fatigue, menstrual problems, recurrent infections, and having a sensitivity to cold, those are all things you want to think about. If you have those, you want to think about thyroid issues. If you're having trouble with sleep, if you can't get the sleep, or you have a hard time falling asleep, or you wake up many times in the middle of the night, or you don't wake feeling rested, or you find yourself crashing during the middle of the day and needing a nap in the middle of the afternoon, then we want to think about adrenal issues. And so lots of areas to think about. Know that it's not just in your head. There are reasons why you may not have energy.
I heard you mention bioidentical hormones. Mm-hmm. What is that? What are those?
They're basically plant-based hormones that have some impact. It's another option to hormone replacement therapy.
Oh, okay. Rather than the traditional Western kind of hormones that we hear about. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I do hormone replacement work with men as well as women.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Wow. So it sounds like together you have quite a synergy in helping people increase their energy levels. So tell us about the Take Back Your Time and Energy lecture workshop series that you have coming up in June.
Yeah, we're excited about that. It's coming up on June 23rd. It's a Tuesday at 6:30 in the evening. It is a free workshop, and we're going to be really exploring these concepts more in depth and letting women walk away with some real tools and practical steps that they can take that are really right for them. It's really the opportunity to explore where they are at and help them begin making choices that will make a real difference in their lives.
I know this may be hard to pinpoint into, you know, three short answers, but I'm wondering if there's anything that you can tell listeners today about, you know, like simple steps that they can do to increase energy. I don't know if there's a bullet answer for that, but I'll try.
Okay. Well, from a life coaching perspective, a lot of it has to do with identifying where you're at and what's really true for you. If you're somebody, for example, where, you know, when you look at your physical environment, you realize that your desk is a mess, you know, you haven't had a chance to organize that closet, and you realize you've thought about it 5 times in one day, it's making the time to go ahead and take care of that so you're not thinking about it anymore. You know, it's identifying really which piece is on your mind the most. So sometimes it's as simple as just taking 5 minutes. And I know the first response is usually, but I don't have 5 minutes. How am I supposed to do that? And it can be as simple. I know when I was going through it myself, I remember being on the hamster wheel. And it took my coach about 4 or 5 weeks to convince me to find 5 minutes because I was convinced I didn't have it. And what I did for me was each time I was in the car, I would deliberately shut off my cell phone and turn off the radio and give myself those 5 minutes while I was driving. And that was where I began to really kind of hone in, okay, what is it that I really need?
So you took those 5 minutes to really think about mm-hmm. what was happening and why you were so stressed out.
Yeah, it was amazing. Even just after a couple of weeks, it was little things that came to mind. You know, sometimes it was just like, you know, gosh, what I really want to do right now is go take a walk. And so when I would get where I was going, I would take a little walk and I would feel a lot better, just giving myself that little peace.
Can you tell us a little bit more about, I know I understand that you experienced something kind of traumatic in your life mm-hmm. and then it led you down a different path. So can you talk a bit about that?
Yes, that was transformative in many ways. Let's see, at the time, my son was about 3 years old. My daughter was 12 days old. And I was working in the real estate industry, and it was early June. If you know anything about the real estate industry in early June, it starts going a little bit crazy. And my mom actually called that morning and went into the hospital with a ruptured brain aneurysm. She was 49 years old. It was rather unexpected. The very next day, my business partner, who also happened to be my mother-in-law, went into the hospital after having fallen and hurt herself. So now we've got both moms in the hospital. And the next day after that Thursday, my husband's father showed up after about a 20-year absence. Mm-hmm. And I remember that Friday waking up thinking, you know what? I don't want to know what else could happen in a week. I'm done asking. Yeah, and there were a lot of life situations going on. My mom happened to be in the middle of a divorce. So, you know, being that type of person, I really had it in my head that I was responsible for getting it all done. Therefore, I had to do it all. So I took everything on and began creating a situation where there really wasn't anything left. And I hit a wall probably in about November when I remember stepping out of the shower and really seeing myself for the first time in months. And I realized, you know, my eyes were sunken in, my hair was falling out, my body was shutting down, and what went through my mind at the time was that I'm already dead and it's just a matter of time before my body follows. And it was really my life coach who helped me through the process of recognizing that it was my choices that had created that. And how could I make different choices that could recreate something? I think one of the key elements she taught me was the difference between being responsible for seeing it done and actually doing it myself. You know, learning delegation and asking for help and those kinds of things were key elements. There was also a point at which, you know, I was making better choices, but my body still wasn't responding. I was exhausted. I was depressed. Probably some of the postpartum still going on. So I went and saw a naturopath, and she listened to all that had been going on and said, well, yeah, no wonder you are completely physically burnt out. And she helped me tremendously to get my body back into balance as well so that I had energy, you know, both from the choices that I was making as well as from the physical aspects getting back into balance again.
Wow. Marcia, before we jump into what you would do in the situation to help somebody out when they maybe are so stressed out and their adrenals are down. We just want to let our listeners know that you're listening to Bread and Roses. And at this point, we would encourage you to call in and ask questions for our naturopathic doctor and life coach here in the studio today. And you also have a chance to win a book for our first three callers. So we'll have Lori describe that. But the phone number is 503-231-8187.
Great.
Lori, what can you describe your book now?
That would be great. It's called Who Am I? How to Answer the Single Most Important Question You'll Ever Ask. And it really gets into that mental and emotional component, in the sense that, you know, like I said, if you don't know who you are, you can't make choices that honor that in your life. So it's a book that really helps women reconnect with what's true for them, gets them down to what their values are, what really inspires them, what really matters to them, and teaches them how to make choices on a day-to-day basis that honors that and creates a life that they can feel really passionate and good about.
Great. So again, that number is 503-231-8187. So we asked our life coach here what she would do, what the magic bullet answer is for helping relieve stress in your life. What, from the physiological perspective, is there one or two things that, you know, we can do that are easy steps to start this process?
Well, it goes without saying that, you know, nutrition is key. You really have to make sure that you're giving your body the gas it needs to function. And, you know, part of when you come visit me, it's I'm hearing your story and I'm hearing all of it. And the first visit's an hour and a half or two, and we go through it. You're not just your symptoms when you walk in the door. And so part of that is it's a different combination for each unique person who comes in. Usually that ends up being what works for them. But the simple aspects, I mean, really trying to make sure you get enough sleep at night and incorporating a meditative practice like Qigong or Tai Chi, yoga, something of that, where that creates also exercise for you, but also space to have some mental rest and some meditation, really important. And then again, like I said, you have to stop eating the junk. You have to eat fruits and vegetables and good, healthy food to nourish your body, and then we can sort of look at and I can give you tips and ways to do that and incorporate healthy food into your lifestyle, and then we can start looking at all the other things that I mentioned earlier.
Great. And I see our engineer is juggling many phone calls, so do we have our first caller?
Hello
caller, go ahead.
Hi, my name's Jennifer, and I have a question about, I have an overactive thyroid, and I'm resistant to get on medication, and I was wondering if there's any herbal remedies that I could use or that you would recommend.
So you have an overactive thyroid.
Yes,
there's definitely tonifying botanicals and from a nutritional perspective, you know, vitamins and nutrients and things that you can utilize. It's kind of a complicated scenario, though, and there's not sort of one magic bullet that I could tell you. It would be easier to sort of off the cuff advice is not the best sometimes with complicated thyroid issues. So knowing your situation, there might be a few other things I might, you know, specify. I hesitate to give you one thing in particular that would help with that. It really is a little more complex than that.
Is it typically trial and error?
It can be. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, ultimately what it comes down to is what makes you feel the best. You know, one medication may work or not for others. And it's really, again, about finding the proper combination of things for you, that makes you feel well every day.
Well, thank you for that advice. I haven't seen a naturopath about it yet, but I'm thinking about going down that route.
Absolutely. We do have lots of options, many components. And again, we usually, you know, we talk through hydrotherapy, botanical medicine, homeopathy, nutrition. There's so many tools out there.
Hydrotherapy.
Hydrotherapy, really, it's therapy with water, whether it's frozen, cold, hot, steaming. There's a variety of ways you can stimulate your body and your immune system using water, which is super inexpensive and easy to use.
Thank you for calling, Jennifer.
Thank you so much.
All right, and I believe we have another caller, and for those of you out there who haven't had a chance to call in, it's 503-231-8187. Go ahead, caller. Oh, we're having a hard time hearing you.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, hi.
Hi. Oh, sorry, I was listening to the radio and heard that someone was still talking. So
do you have a question for our naturopathic doctor or life coach?
I do. I'm getting married this summer, and as it gets closer and closer, all of these issues with my back that I've just kind of had all along keep getting worse and worse, and I'm just having a hard time. Like, I don't really have time to take care, you know, do a lot to take care of myself right now, and so I'm just kind of looking for any recommendations, like, any recommendations to help with that. It's mostly in my sacrum, but it spreads up through my psoas, and I don't know, it's getting to the point where at the end of a hard day, I am crying from the pain of it.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Yes, definitely a stressful time right before you get married. I can sympathize. I think probably the quickest thing you could do tonight is take an Epsom salts bath. Take a cupful of Epsom salts in a tub of water and sit in there for about 20 or 30 minutes. Make the water as warm as you can tolerate it. And that's going to help relax your muscles. The magnesium in the Epsom salts will be an instant sort of relief. Really try to incorporate at least 5 minutes of some sort of stretching. And, there are some specific things you can do in that regard. But if you can find a yoga class, that would be great. But if you have any numbness or tingling certainly you're going to want to, I don't know if you've had any trauma or anything, but you're going to want to have some, you want to get that evaluated, make sure that, imaging done, make sure there's no, real damage there. But certainly taking time out as a upcoming bride and getting some massage therapy would be fabulous for you too.
Yeah, that's the hard part is trying to, have a great masseuse lined up. It's just, finding the time where it works for both her schedule and mine.
Acupuncture is also a really great option, and you can get a treatment in about 15 or 20 minutes.
I hadn't really thought of that. That's pretty effective with back pain.
Oh, it's very effective with back pain. It's amazing with back pain.
Wonderful.
Yeah, from if I can add my 2 cents, from a life coaching perspective, if we were to talk or explore that a little bit, many of us will hold on to our stress, whether it's fears or doubts or even excitement, in our bodies. And so sometimes identifying really what is that about? What is your body trying to tell you that you need that you're not acknowledging right now? And what is it that you really want? How do you want to walk through the marriage and the experience of it in a way that really feels good to you?
Thank you for calling. We have time for a few more calls. Our number is 503-231-8187. And I believe we have someone on the line.
Hi.
Hi.
So I guess my question, I want to thank Ashley, thanks for having these women on your show.
Thank you.
I kind of fall into that category where I work with kids every day, and I just find myself getting completely drained and tired in the afternoon, and I have an iron deficiency, and I find myself medicating with caffeine. And I was wondering if you have any suggestions, or I try to eat red meat at least twice or three times a week, and I'm not sure about iron pills. They kind of freak me out a little bit, but.
Sure. And yeah, that's something you really need to stay on top of, because that can be huge. So I would say, there are lots of options out there for iron supplementation. There are a couple that I particularly like, that I think you would find. You can even get liquid forms, drops that you can put, in your mouth, very easy to take. And if you're not supplementing any iron, you really should have some lab tests, make sure that your, range is where, figure out where you're at. How depleted you are, and there are multiple ways you can supplement that. And you also want to think about the components that your body uses, like vitamin C and copper, that kind of thing as well, that your body uses in the process of processing blood. So I think I would encourage you to be open to the idea of supplementation and talk it through with someone who has your knowledge.
And who would you talk to? Just kind of anyone at like the Whole Foods or wherever they sell it, I guess?
Well, actually, anemia is a really complex physical issue, and I would recommend seeing a doctor. And I, of course, offer myself to you to come in and schedule an appointment. And as a naturopath, I think you'll find really great resolution by visiting with a naturopath.
Thanks, and if you keep listening, we'll be giving the information about how to contact Lori and Marcia. So thank you for calling, and it looks like we have one more caller. Hello, caller, are you there?
I am.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. So I apologize. I just tuned in like maybe 10 minutes ago, and I didn't catch the beginning of the show, but I immediately connected with whichever woman was speaking about stepping out of the shower and identifying with the fact that, you know, she was, her body was dead, and it was a matter of time before the rest of it followed through. It's kind of where I am right now, and my situation is I've recently learned that I am not really ovulating, and my I have elevated levels of, I think it's called LSH or something like that, where my eggs might be too old to conceive, the quality isn't well. I'm just wondering, I've been looking into the homeopathic stuff, but I haven't followed through yet, and is that something that could be helpful?
Actually, homeopathy is an amazing tool, but what I would recommend for you, just in the brief bit I've heard, is taking a look, doing an analysis of a month-long saliva collection of your hormones so you can see what's ebbing and flowing throughout the month. And then using bioidentical hormones to help balance that out. I think it could potentially be a really good effect for you.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I would do through a homeopathic person?
Well, homeopathy is different than naturopathy. Homeopathy is one tool that we have. And as a naturopath, I can prescribe homeopathy as well. But naturopathy, yes, you would want to go to a naturopath to talk through that scenario.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So again, why don't we take this time here, we have a few minutes left in our show, to describe the lecture series that's coming up again in June, or the lecture, I guess, that you're having. So if you could.
Yeah, again, it's June 23rd. It's a Tuesday at 6:30 in the evening, and it's going to be about an hour. It is limited seating, so it's going to stay a small group, and we're going to be really getting into how to take back your energy. We're going to be exploring what are the aspects that are draining you and helping you identify what specifically that is for you, as well as what the next steps are that you can take, whether it's physical, emotional, or the mental pieces.
And how do people connect with you and get involved in this?
Actually, we're going to be hosting the lecture at Urban Wellness Group, which is the clinic where I practice on 49th and Division. And you can call the office there. They're going to have a sign-up sheet. Space will be limited, so we would love for you to call and get signed up early. And you can call a number. I'll give that to you now. It's 503-445-9771. And our goddesses behind the front desk there will help you out, answer questions for you, and get you all signed up.
Great. And that is a free workshop for all of our listeners out there. You've been listening to Bread and Roses here on KBOO FM. And I want to thank Lori Chant and Marcia Wiggins for being with us. And thanks for all of our callers that called in.
All right. Thank you.
Have a great evening. My mind.